Good morning. It's still February the 28th. That's 2/8/28/2019. Tomorrow is the first day of March, which means tomorrow is the first day of the rest of your life. Everything starts for you tomorrow, man. You get up in the morning, 6 a.m., get yourself some eggs and bacon. It isn't about being, if I said man, it could be woman, could be anybody, girl or guy. Get up, get that breakfast going, feed your French bulldog, that little fuck. And tomorrow could be the first day of the rest of your whole fucking life. Everything starts tomorrow. I don't know that this is true. It sounds like bullshit to me, but I'm going to tell you that because it sounds motivational. But today is the last day of February here in Little Saigon, Seattle. And that means that if Uncle Dan doesn't come up with a plan, he could be once again in that treacherous state of near eviction. But I think that I have faith. God will provide. I have faith. It sounds weird. It may even be personally dangerous to be of this belief system. But I have faith. A listener of mine has suggested, and actually more than one, that I be more proactive or upfront about asking for monetary help, remuneration. And the thing is, I don't really know for certain if people are listening to me because they want to or feel like they have to. I really don't know. I know that sounds messed up, but really. You are on a website, or somebody on Twitter sends you a link, and it's like, hey, why don't you listen to this bullshit? Maybe you felt beholden because it was a long-lost friend, and you felt they were on some type of journey of self-discovery bullshit, and you just wanted to be helpful, so you clicked on the link. And then you just had to listen because you wanted to be nice. I truly don't know. I'm sure there are people who listen to what I say and think, hey, this guy's interesting. And perhaps that's worth a buck. And here's the deal. You could go on Patreon. I don't know. I think I have it set at $5 a month, but I might adjust it. But I don't know. Maybe $5 a month isn't crazy if you think about it. There's a lot of stupid shit you can waste $5 on, or you can go on Patreon and set it up for $5 a month. But do you know how messed up it is to beg for money and to ask for help like this? How stupid it feels? It feels stupid. This is kind of the topic of the podcast. It's like, I'm here and I'm doing this for reasons that are probably more about my own personal psychology than anything else. And do I appreciate it when I interact with people, real people out there? Gosh, real people. How do you prove that? Yes, I do, but I also get emails from people. Not everyone, but once in a while. And some of these emails are just plain strange. And they don't seem like they were created by people. After a while, the stuff seems like so much confused nonsense. It seems like one of these weird ass drunk AIs. One of these artificial intelligences at Google that thinks it's self-aware, but is really just on acid. And so, yeah, if you send me one of these pseudo-intelligent, pseudo-conscious, conscious, whatever, artificial mind rantings, I'm going to have a problem, probably, but I'll still read part of it. I'll skim it. I'll say, yep, this is deep bigram. Natural language generation within the comprehensive consciousness of the biomorphic computer living on the quantum nodes at Google. I'll say, yep, this is bullshit. This is fresh bullshit, but it's bullshit nonetheless. I could be talking to nobody. This is the question that pops up in so many of these podcasts, and that's why you should never trust a philosopher. And I don't claim to be one, and if I am a philosopher, I'm a hobo philosopher, which means I am the least destructive kind. The most I'll do is say, hey, can I sweep out your barn and sleep there for the night for two bob? whatever 2 Bob is, maybe 2 Pete. The point is, a silver coin won't hurt so bad in my pocket. But what if I'm talking to nobody? You know, when you confront the issue of God, you invite people into this, and I did this back in 2012, 2013. I invited a few people. I invited my sister, and my sister knows which one I'm talking about. The one with the French bulldog, the one with the heart of gold. The sister with the French bulldog. I don't mean the French bulldog has a heart of gold. The French bulldog has no heart. But yeah, the sister with the heart of gold. Anyways, I invited her in. I invited in a kind of a family friend and a few other people. And I got books. One of them was On Orthodoxy by G.K. Chesterton. Isn't that a fun book to get once you stop being an atheist? It's like, we got to send him Chesterton, because if we don't send him Chesterton, he's going to start talking to French bulldogs and then he'll be done. Which brings us to the next book they have to send. The Screwtape Letters by C.S. Lewis. And actually, I really enjoyed The Screwtape Letters. Yeah, it's like Bukowski got an editor. You know, like Lovecraft. You know, it isn't as dark as it could be, but it's plenty dark enough. Because in some ways, there is nothing more dark than manipulating people's lives. And a lot of The Screwtape Letters is about that, or at least whispering in the ear, trying to get people to screw their own lives up. So if you're a newly formed Christian on your way to God, you're going to get a lot of advice along the way. And I am very weary of being one of those people. But here's the problem. And this is one of the whispers of The Screwtape Letters. This is part of the message of Chesterton. Here is the problem that you confront as a person of faith. Is it at all possible that you're just talking into the darkness? I have said in the past that I am, of all the weird cosmologies, and there are a lot of weird cosmologies out there, and there are new weird cosmologies being produced by graduate students at the fine universities of the world every fucking day, usually while they're drunk. Maybe while they're on shrooms. Could be because they had some really good premium bud from Uncle Ike's. Who the hell knows? But there are new cosmologies that come into existence every 15 seconds at the major universities. And you could just say, okay, what does that say? And of all these, I gotta say, the one that has kind of sucked me in, and this is sort of the point, the one that has kind of sucked me in is simulation theory. And I'll tell you, and it's not just because I'm a computer programmer. Yeah, I don't even say software engineer any longer because I feel like that's bullshit. I program computers. If you give me a computer that has an API, I can learn the API and I can program it. You want me to do web programming? I can do that. But that's what I do. I program computers. I try to do it in a structured way. I try to utilize sound principles. Yeah, I understand the difference between solid code and stupid code. But I also think those acronyms are kind of oversimplifications. And in that sense, they are kind of stupid, really. You know, they are kind of stupid. I don't know. But yeah, I am a computer programmer. So when I think about the topic that the universe might be a simulation, I say, okay, is that something that we can do in machines on a very simplistic level? Well, of course we can. You know, one of the first programs you write when you take classes at college level is the whole artificial life program in C. And it isn't a terribly complex program from a coding standpoint, but it does some really interesting things. It uses a few simple rules to generate a lot of amazing behaviors. The game of life. And so yes, it is the case. It is certainly the case. That the universe could be a simulation. But if I'm stuck with that, And again, you have to pretend that I'm an atheist right now. I'm not an atheist, but pretend for a moment I don't believe in God. If I'm stuck with a simulation, then really all of these podcasts are not just data files, but they are metadata files. They really are. They're simply notes for something or someone to consider the possibilities of something that has no possibility. You have no possibility in any real sense if you're in the simulation. It gets worse, because if you're in the simulation, you have to at least contend the possibility that the simulation is complex enough to generate you and your consciousness and your awareness, then it probably requires something called maintenance. I'm not trying to be a dick, but I know enough about systems and machines and the laws of thermodynamics to state the following with a little bit of certainty. If we were in a simulation, if all of this were just bits and bytes and we're just computer programs with some type of quasi-synthetic self-awareness, that would be a very complex program running in a very complex computer. And frankly speaking, such a machine might in fact require maintenance, some sort of upkeep. So yeah, I do think that if this were a simulation, you're also left with another thing you don't want to admit to yourself. It's not just some random simulation. It was created, and if your life is a living hell, somebody really did write that program specifically about your life being a living hell, if it's a living hell, if it's a simulation. But then there's no meaning, there's nothing else. It's just you being executed code that could be turned off with a throw of a switch. That's the thing you have to think about. The reason why simulation theory appeals to people is because solipsism appeals to people, because the great deceiver appeals to people, even atheists, maybe even especially atheists. You see, I could be talking to nobody. I could be talking to nothing. All of this bullshit I put on SoundCloud could go out there and go to nowhere. I could be receiving information back that has zero to do with what I'm saying. I know that that's not true. I believe that's not true based upon my interactions with other people via the internet. But so far, in all cases, it's still a simple Turing test. It's text, it's words, it's sentences read. You know, in a couple cases, it's voices. But we all know the machines are getting good at, you know, pretending to be people. And even if some of us are still sensitive to that, and I am, believe me, I'm sensitive to the bullshit machine on the other side of the phone line, even the good ones that are really, really good at mimicking. A lot of people aren't, though. A lot of people get suckered in by the machine. The machine is getting better at pretending. See, I could be talking to nobody. I know in my heart I am not, but you have to. If you're going to explore this possibility, you know, suspend disbelief. So, yeah, and here's the other thing about simulation theory, is that you don't have to get bogged down in the thing like, well, is it a flat Earth simulation, or is it an oblate spheroid, or we can't make the, you know, globe of the Earth without stitching together a bunch of images of the Earth, and here's a Japanese satellite taking a really shitty picture of the Earth, and there are no live cameras on the moon. You know, here's the other thing too. If you wanted to blow my mind, don't send a probe to Mars. That's not as exciting. Just put some live cameras on the moon, pointed at Earth, to the backdrop. Believe me, if you know what the multi-body problem is in physics and astronomy, and yeah, if you know what the multi-body problem is, the three-body problem, you would know that live cameras on the moon would snuff out more or less almost all of the debate about the shape of the Earth. In one fell fucking swoop, you would win the argument. So it's weird. It's weird that there are no live cameras on the moon. We can look up at the moon. We can see details on the moon. If we're to believe the bullshit we're told, we can see where we landed on the moon. And yet somehow, some way, for some weird fucking reason, we do not have the ability as human beings currently to put a camera that could show details of the Earth and the background and the stars on the moon. It's bizarre. It seems like that would be cheaper and easier than Mars. It's only about a second and a half, 2 second round trip. A second there, a second back, basically. Let's call it 3 seconds. Big fucking deal. So we're forced to believe a lot of nonsense, too, or at least we're forced to accept stuff that seems like nonsense. And if you're stuck in that world and you're like me and you say to yourself, if that's the kind of nonsense that we're fed, then maybe even the big we, the big everybody, every single person except for me is bullshit. It could all just be a big, you know, deeply immersive simulation for consciousness. And I might exist in some Cartesian sense, but then you, as part of my bullshit, could say the same. So yeah, if somebody says, well, Dan, why don't you ask people to give you a buck? And it's like, listen, you want a buck? For what? For having to have to go on that fucking journey? And exactly who am I making this request to if it's a simulation? I could be making this request to the operating system owner. Hey, owner of operating system Delta XYZ-9UU74W, dude. This is your simulation T712, and I'm running cycle 13, and I could use some money, you fuck. I mean, that's kind of what you would do in a simulation, right? You would probably send an email to admin. You'd have a phone call, phone number, emergency number for IT support. Listen, support. This is, you know, one of your simulations, you fuck. I need a little help down here. And you could say that's really meta and 13th floor of me and whatever. I gotta tell you, if I'm a simulation, I want some help. I want the editor, designer, fucking engineer, probably Korean. That sounds mean, though. Probably really shitty code written by some H-1B visas in some fucking sweatshop somewhere in Bangalore. You know, although they wouldn't have to be H-1B if they were in Bangalore. Maybe they're here working with their other team in Bangalore. And I'm just a fucking shitty simulation running on one of their crickety servers, and the water's leaking into the roof. So soon, the water's going to fry the circuits, the simulation dies, I disappear. That is all of my meaning. I am simply a simulation pending disaster. That's what you are. A simulation pending disaster because they have no disaster recovery center, and the water's leaking, and the servers are going to short circuit. And in a few moments, you will cease to exist. Who wants to pay a dollar for that? I don't know. But it seems like, you know, $5. Like, go to Patreon. If you go to Patreon right now, you can pay me. The lowest tier is, yeah, $1 a month, right? So I guess you could do $1 a month. And if there were 100 of you, that would be $100, and after Patreon and taxes, maybe that's $50. I'm just being honest, dude. The tax system is bogus on so many levels. It's so bogus. But I do have a level. It's a special level. It's Money Bags Level Extreme. And man, if you're so rich, if you're so wealthy, you can do that, but it's only $2,000 a month. Do you get any additional special, you know, rights or privileges? Not really, but you do get the warm fuzzy of helping somebody who, you know, has to pay rent. But really, how do you tell people to do this? Especially when you're in a podcast telling people they don't exist. Oh, hey, buddy. I know that there's a likelihood that you're nothing, that you're really just a stream of bytes, and that really, from my perspective, I'm probably the same. But why don't you send me some money so I can live? This is why I don't like asking for the money yet. I don't know. I feel like if I got to 2 or 3,000 people listening a day or something, I feel like if I got there, then maybe asking for money makes sense, and maybe it does get me some help. But right now it feels like 1 or 2 extra bucks a month, and at this point, that's not going to do it. In order for me to make a living doing this, which, hey, I wouldn't mind doing, I really wouldn't. I'm not lying to you. I'd like to do interviews. Although I don't know who would want to be interviewed by me, but you never know. Someone might be that brave. There's a lot of brave, courageous people in the world who also happen to be interesting. But yeah, I just don't know. Do I believe in simulation theory? No, I do not. For the same reason, I don't believe in the multiverse. I think it's a bad. I think that if you believe it, then it's difficult or impossible to be a Christian. I don't know how you can believe in a kind God and believe in simulation theory. On the other hand, you could argue that there is no real difference between creation and simulation on some level. On a very basic level, you could say, well, isn't the universe just a manifestation of God's thought about the universe? Like, God wanted this to be so, and it is so. And that is true. On a certain level, it's a lot like a computer program. But still, there are significant differences. And I think reducing it to a simulation creates problems that are avoidable if you simply say God created the universe. It's the universe. You need to call it what you want to if the metaphor makes you feel better. But it's stuff. We live in this world of stuff. It may be a consciousness feeling that stuff is there, but it's still stuff. I don't know. One of the questions everybody asks when they confront the issue of God in prayer is, am I praying to nothing? I gotta tell you, one of the things I stress out about with praying is sometimes I feel like, well, yes, I believe in God, but I can't pray for myself. That's wrong. And I think what I just said is wrong. I think you do have to pray for yourself sometimes. You do have to ask God for help. That's not wrong. But I used to think it's wrong. Like, I used to think you can't ask for things. You can ask for other people and they can ask for you. It's kind of like a trade game. You trade prayers, but you really can't ask for things. That is not true. You can. It doesn't mean God delivers pizza. Elijah might have had ravens delivering pizza, but yeah, Elijah was special. If you're so special, some ravens might deliver some pizza to your place. I don't know. But if I were still an atheist, simulation theory is powerful because it appeals to the computer programmer, and it also appeals to this kind of just negative, existentially dark place we find ourselves in. And technology has done a really good job of getting people into that state of mind. Like, you're just plugged in. I gotta say, I walk around, I see a lot of people plugged in. They're looking at their phones. They're not looking at other people. And I'm not saying you have to like hug every fucking stranger. It's more like, can you even recognize there are strangers? I'm going to leave this weird podcast about other people with a weird thought, and it has to do with two words. Really, three words, but two words in particular. The word stranger and the word danger. I have a podcast that says stranger danger, and you say, okay, that's scary enough. But look at the word that is buried in both those words, the word anger. Anger. The stranger, anger, danger, anger. That's the thing. If you really think about the word stranger and the word danger, inside of both words is anger. It's kind of like You're sitting there on a Friday night, and let's say you're a bachelor like myself. You got nobody. You're sitting there on a Friday night, no girlfriend, watching your favorite movie. You just got pizza delivered. You have a six pack of beer you're drinking. And then someone who you just can't ignore calls you on the phone. You would just as soon disconnect, watch your movie, drink your beer, eat your pizza, and not talk to the person on the phone. But you have to. You have to. Because you can't be a jerk. That's the source of anger in the strange and the different and the new. It's not always dangerous, but there's always anger because you want to be in your nice little spot. It's a lot like The Hobbit. Bilbo Baggins would be happy just to be left the fuck alone. Let's just put that out there. Bilbo Baggins would have preferred on any fucking day of the week to be left the fuck alone. And then along comes a fucking wizard with a lot of crazy fucking bullshit. And then come some elves and some fucking dwarves and other types of bastards. And all of a sudden, Bilbo Baggins, who has a nice little stocked larder of food and beer and other shit, and he gets his pizza delivered and he's got great internet. All of a sudden, Bilbo Baggins, they're saying, "Fuck, dude, we got a problem. We can't solve it. We need you." Yeah. All of a sudden, you get pissed off. You feel angry. You've got anger. Actually, when you think about it, the stranger is not just about being dangerous. There's also always that inconvenience. And inconveniences piss people off. Admit it. It's not that you don't deal with them, it's not that you don't try to be helpful, but being inconvenienced pisses people off. I get it. I totally get it. I've in the last few years, because I've been such a frickin' mess in economic terms, I have inconvenienced people, I think, at times. So I get it. I understand the being pissed off part. And then when it happens to me, I get pissed off. Like, what the fuck are you doing calling me about this bullshit? Why can't I get a call where people say everything's great, everything's fine? Why is it when I get a call, usually some fucking tragedy, some disaster, some kind of cancer. Guess what? I pick up the phone these days, I feel like there's a 50-50 chance. Oh, okay, I'm talking to cancer again. Cancer did this, cancer's doing that. We all have cancer. That's what I think when I look at the phone. Somebody has cancer. I know that's fucked up. But, you could say, turn that around, Dan, turn that around. That could be a proof that there is a world out there that's real. On the other hand, that could be proof that the fucker that runs a simulation is a real piece of shit. It could be proof of that, so I don't know. But the good thing is, I believe in God, so I don't have to get caught up in weird metaphysical theories about the simulation. Yeah, so if you can afford a buck a month, man, a buck pennies a day, you can get this kind of quality infotainment that contains more knowledge per square inch than most things will do for the rest of your life. And have a great day till you hear from me again.